listening to Wellness Wednesday, a show about health and wellness in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. This week, excellent health with the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation.
Thank you for listening to Excellent Health with the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation. On this show, we'll be speaking with medical experts from YKHC about health-related topics that you can use to keep yourself and your loved ones in excellent health. Uli Haugo, I'm Nikolai Joke from YKHC. Kuyana Ilagarluta. YKHC's annual tribal gathering event is a meeting of local leaders who come together to work with the organizational leadership at YKHC to establish annual healthcare priorities for our region. At the last few gatherings that I've been to, there are always one or two community delegates who express the need in their communities to be able to contact a local health aide directly in times of an emergency. And when I was growing up in Nabaskak in the 1990s, two of my aunts were local health aides, and I remember them showing up to my house or to my grandparents' house on several occasions when we needed help after regular clinic hours. They often took shifts being on call, which meant that in the evenings and weekends, they'd only be a phone call away to respond when anyone in the community needed them. I think that it's only natural for any person to want to have the ability to call someone directly when you need medical help who can respond quickly. I think it's only natural for any person to want to have the ability to call someone directly when you need help and who can respond quickly. What I didn't realize is what being on call at this level costed people like my aunts, the time away from their children and their families, the inability to participate in subsistence activities that required them to leave home, and so on. To speak about this topic, as well as about the work that YKHC is doing to address the need for swift response in emergent situations, I'm joined today by YKHC Injury Control and CMS Manager Teresa Markham and Community Health Aid Program Deputy Director Joseph Okitkun. Koyana, for joining me. To start, can you please take turns introducing yourself, who you are, where you're from, how long you've served in your role at YKHC? Teresa, let's start with you.
Good morning. My name is Teresa Markham. I work for YKHC with our Injury Control and EMS department. I'm currently from Bethel. I also go by Alak and Jungawiyarak.
Oh, that's awesome.
My story began when I was looking for a hobby in 2001. And so I decided I was going to sign up for an EMT class at the Bethel Fire Department. That's where I became a volunteer. I learned that I liked helping people, and I wanted to keep doing it. The moment I fell in love with it was when the first patient said, "Thank you."
Nice.
It made me ask myself, how do I do more? How can I be on every ambulance run? How can I help all of those patients? And that's when I started helping in our classroom at the Bethel Fire Department, teaching more volunteers how to help each other. Then I started asking myself, how can I do even more than that? Like, I just really had the passion grew. Then that's when YKHC recruited me and taught me how I can help our health aides respond to emergency care across the region. And I really, really love that a lot. And that passion just still drives because I know how hard that work is to actually respond during a call and how to respond to a loved one during an emergency and how to turn like a scary and chaotic moment, you know, and into an organized one. And so, that fulfillment really comes back when our students come back and say, "Thank you. You helped me learn those skills and how to help someone during an emergency." And so that still fuels the drive today and then fuels the drive for the team that I get to work with, including our community health aid program. So
that's awesome. Thank you for that introduction. And for those of us who don't know our acronyms, EMT stands for Emergency Medical
Technician.
And then EMS is the Emergency Medical Services.
Correct.
That's awesome. Thank you. And then Joe.
Hi, my name is Joseph Okitkun. I'm originally from Kotlik. I was raised by my grandparents, Jack and Ignis Okitkun from Kotlik. My story, I usually tell people I became a health aide on accident. Before I became a health aide, I was a VPSO. I think during that career, I reached a point of burnout. I had applied for the health aide position in Kotlik. I was hired. My plan was to be a health aide for a year and then return to being a VPSO, Village Public Safety Officer. My year came up and I thought maybe one more year. and I've been saying that every year for 14 years.
That's awesome.
Yep. I started back in 2012 as a community health aide based in Kotlik. I took my first management position back in 2017 here in Bethel. And I've been in my current role as deputy director for...
About 2 years?
No, hold on. I've been in my current role as deputy director for a little under a year.
Okay.
But prior to that, I was the field supervision coordinator with the community health aid program and oversaw a lot of the day-to-day operations.
Thank you both for sharing. All right, so let's start laying some groundwork and begin to understand the current emergency response situation in our communities and how we got there. Let's get some historical background about the health aid program, Joe.
So the health aid program, it started out it was established in the late 1960s as a way to provide healthcare to remote Alaska, where we trained local people to be able to handle your acute care and then how to respond to emergencies. And since then, it's been evolving to what the program is today. We have health aides in almost every community. Our training center here in Bethel has trained several hundred health aides over the years.
Can we get some background on the nurse triage line program and how that came to be?
Yeah, so I mean, when I started as a community health aide based in Kotlik, I was direct on call, which is I think what most people are used to, where each community had an on-call cell phone, and if there was an emergency, they'd call that health aide. As a program, we often get feedback from our staff periodically. One of the overarching themes and something that we noticed in the program was burnout. Burnout for health aides, and a lot of it had to do with these after hours, middle of the night type of calls. And we didn't understand it at the time because we weren't collecting much of the data. What we discovered later was a great percentage of the calls that were coming through were simple simple questions or home care can be advised, and they come in when the clinic opened. Yeah.
Okay.
So we went through a couple. I think it started, in 2014 or 15, when we had our first nurse triage. We contracted that out with a company. We transitioned a couple of times. And then I think a little over a year ago, we have nurse triage in-house now, which means instead of patients calling the triage line and being forwarded to a big international company, now when you call the nurse triage line, it goes to people that are staffed by YK.
And they know Bethel, they know the region.
Yep, they go through some orientation a lot in Bethel, so they get introduced to the population, the community, the culture. They have a better idea of what villages look like, how people live. Because they're our employees, we have a lot more control over the training that they go through, so that they're a lot more familiar with the people that we're serving.
That's awesome. And you kind of touched on this in your introduction. You are a health aide. You've been a health aide for 14 years, you said. Can you please share a little bit about what being a health aide was like before the nurse triage line You mentioned it a little bit before, but I'd like to hear a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So I was a community health aide in Kotlik. The population is between 600 and 700 people. Wow. It was one of the busier communities within our region. It was an 8-to-5 clinic. We saw patients oftentimes. Our schedule is packed. You don't take on-call until your session 2. That's when you get your emergency training, where you deal with, like, the heart and lungs, and you're able to identify what emergencies are at a deeper, at a higher level. Being on call, I think it does take a toll, even if you don't get any calls. The role of being the healthcare expert in the village after hours when an emergency happens, I mean, it's a pretty heavy load to carry, I think. And there's a lot of rules you have to follow when you're on call. You have to be within reach of the cell phone. You have to be within your community. You're expected to respond within 10 or 15 minutes if there is an emergency.
So you can't leave the community. Yep. Wow.
So you're tied to either home or the community. Often when I was on call, I didn't plan anything for my day. I stayed home. I did things that I could simply drop and go, because, I mean, a lot of times that's what you need to do. Even over the weekends, drop what you're doing, respond.
Wow.
The work-life balance, when you're on call, it takes a while to get used to that big responsibility. But I think over time you do get used to it, the expectations. But in the long run, when we talked about burnout, that was when we survey our staff, that's usually one of the top burnout because of after hours.
Wow. And then how often would you respond to actual life or death situations?
Life or death, not too often, thankfully.
Yeah.
But when you do respond, they take a huge toll on your physical health and also your mental health.
Yeah, I could imagine. So thanks for sharing. And it sounds like an intense lifestyle to have. Do you mind sharing how often you thought about changing careers to one that has a better work-life balance?
I think early in my career as a health aide, it crossed my mind quite a bit. Mm. That opportunity to come back to being a VPSO was always there. Huh. but I think after a while, once you get into a flow of things, once you begin to understand your role as a community health aide, and you come to the realization that you're trained to deal with everything that comes through the door or every emergency that you have to respond to, I think there's, at least to a certain degree, a level of comfort and confidence with the training that you have.
That's awesome. I like that perspective that you have. That's quite impactful to hear. And what kinds of support does the health aid program offer for a health aide? Because as you said, you said that it takes a physical toll, it takes an emotional and mental toll, having to respond and having to be on call, be the community health expert. So what kinds of things are in place now that are intended to keep good health aides in the workforce?
We have different, as a program, we have different types of services available to our staff. The first level is always communication. Whenever our health aides go through something traumatic, they have to tell us. That way we have it documented, and then we have a process with our managers reaching out to staff, making sure that they have what they need, whether it's if they need a debriefing, which is where they just talk things through with either their coworkers or their manager. Or the managers, they're now trained to identify when a staff member needs services. So when they have, if we notice, we call them red flags. Mm. If they have certain indicators, then we refer them to our in-house, either our health aid support position or our behavioral health department.
Yes, I really enjoy that YKHC really takes their health and wellness into consideration. It's always a priority number one to help awesome. Identify burnout and make sure that they're okay. So part of that other part, I just wanted to also echo on to about what it's like being on call is you actually sacrifice some of the fun things in your life. Like, I'm not going to go to bingo. Maybe I'm not going to take that 2-hour long maqe because I might get a call during that time.
Oh, I didn't think about that, huh?
Yeah. Okay.
I think that happened to me once.
Yeah.
That's...
Maybe I'm not going to go to that feast, you know, because I might have to respond across town. It really takes a toll, you know, on, you know, what you get to enjoy in your personal life, in your off time. And so being on call, you know, means trying to be ready and be prepared. And so when our health aides take that very seriously, you know, they're actually sacrificing mm-hmm. some of the things, not just, you know, for themselves, but also with their families as well. So when the health aide's on call, their family's on call as well.
I think having that awareness too within the corporation has been incredibly helpful. So like a lot of our providers there that are staffed either when they're doing clinic or what we call radio medical traffic, they're if they notice anything with the health aides, they often will notify us either through tag or text or through email. So like as a corporation, having that awareness of what these triggers are or what these red flags are, to connect our staff with the help that they deserve or need. It's been a huge culture change for us as a department. Other things that we provide, we do once or twice a year, we have what we call the Health Aid Wellness Retreat.
Oh, nice.
Where we introduce tools that our staff can use when they notice burnout. Mm. The first step is always to identify when burnout happens, because when you're going through it, oftentimes you don't even notice it.
Well, that's interesting.
So we teach them those tools, and then we shift into the treatment. Like a lot of times you can self-treat by doing your hunting, gathering, subsistence, going on a vacation, taking PTO. And then there's other stages where you need professional intervention. So that's when you reach out to a clinician, anyone within the behavioral health department or the health aid support position that we have to give them the services that they need.
That's awesome. I thank you for sharing that. And I'd like to switch gears now a little bit. So one cool thing that I heard recently is the increase of voluntary emergency response trainings in our communities throughout the region. Teresa, can you fill us in on what your department offers and what those opportunities are?
Yes, absolutely. Our EMS training department, we offer first aid CPR classes for our community, and this is our most popular class. Oftentimes, it is required for people's jobs and positions. Mm-hmm. But it also comes in very, very useful for our volunteer search and rescue groups. They also offer not just like search and rescue skills, but then they're often the ones that are responding to an emergency with our community health aides. And so those skills learned in our first aid CPR classes, they're basic life-supporting skills. Let's open that airway and keep it clear. Let's mm-hmm. check on their breathing, and let's help put them in a position that helps make their breathing easier. Another one is, if I see a bleed, let's stop that bleeding. So they're very basic skills where it's about recognizing that emergency, calling for more help so that way you're not alone and your patient's not alone anymore. Help will be on the way. And then calm, comfort, and reassuring skills. Those are the biggest things that are learned and practiced during our classes. We also teach basic life support, which is a healthcare provider class. So when our first responders start going a step up from our first aid classes, and then they're moving on up to our emergency trauma technician class. So the basic life support class is a component of it.
Oh, okay.
So it teaches them high performance CPR.
How is that different from regular CPR?
This is where we actually start measuring metrics.
Oh.
Yes. So it gets a little exciting. I really enjoy it because the metrics that we're measuring is we're aiming for 60 to 80% of the time our responders are doing chest compressions. So we'll run 5-minute drills, and 5 minutes of CPR is a really long time. And so, but out of that 5 minutes, 60 to 80% of the time, they're doing chest compressions, which increases the likelihood of the heart beating again, where we get resuscitate the patient.
You know, I've taken the basic CPR training, first aid classes in the past, not with YKHC, but with a different person here in town. And when we were learning about chest compressions, there was a Bee Gees song that you had
staying
to go.
Staying alive. Yeah, staying alive.
So is there, does that change like generationally?
Oh, no, it does not. It's okay. I think it's still, we still sing it in our classroom.
Okay.
So we definitely do our best to try to take a very serious training and a skill that we hope no one ever has to use. But we try to do it repetitively. We'll ask the questions over and over again, and we try to make it fun. And so the Bee Gees always make it fun. We always get really great big smiles. And then, you know, people really enjoy the classes as they go through it. The second part of like why the basic life support class also gets into that role is we start focusing on team dynamics. So an emergency is scary, it's nerve-wracking, it's chaotic, and it's not just those elements just for the responders. It feels like that to the patient themselves and the bystanders that are there. And so what we're doing is we're trying to take a really chaotic scene and we're going to try to control it. And so where that evolves into is like we start teaching team dynamics. We start identifying who's a lead on that and that responding crew. We start identifying roles and responsibilities. So it would be like, Joe, you're going to do chest compressions. Nikolai, you're going to be doing airway skills. And then as soon as the AED arrives, we're going to be doing this. And then so, and then we practice and we run those drills repeatedly over and over again until it's to the point where students actually get annoyed. Like, how long are we going to do this? We're already really good at this. It's perfect. Because when an emergency happens at 4 a.m., you're tired, you're sleepy, or maybe you just had a really long day and I haven't eaten yet, feeling a little hangry. These skills were just drilled so hard, not just into your brain, they were drilled into your muscles, and you're just going to react. And you're going to react the way we want you to respond. So the third class that we have and where their BLS is incorporated into, it's our Emergency Trauma Technician class. And so it, at minimum, it's 40 hours in length. So it can be taught in 5 days, which is really tight. It's a really intensely packed class. If we can, we would prefer to stretch it out so that way you learn some content, then you get to absorb it and then apply it over time. And so there are different versions of how that class can be taught. It can be taught like as a hybrid class where it's online, and then we can do the in-person skills session, which is a little bit preferred. Or we can do like a 4 to 6 day of nonstop ETT training. And so usually by day three, you can see the brains of our students are getting full, and they're trying to apply their knowledge. It's really great. So it evolves from call the nurse triage line and get the AED, and it turns into like call that person and get the DEA. Wait, what? So, because we are throwing a lot of information out there all at once, and we're transitioning them from maybe a first responder into, like, now we're turning them into emergency medical responders.
That's awesome. And these classes sound really interesting and fun. How can someone who's interested sign up for these courses?
Oh, we are available at EMS training at ykhc.org. So we have a very packed schedule. We, on average, we teach about 80 classes per year to about 600 wow. to 800 students. And so the expectation, if you would like to ask for an ETT training in your community, we're looking at probably about 6 to 12 months out for booking.
Wow.
And it takes quite a bit for us to prep. For the class, make sure all the equipment is, you know, commuted out to the training site. And so prepping for that takes time. So mm-hmm. I know communities are just impatient. They're just kind of like, we might have an emergency now. We understand, but we want to be able to deliver a high quality class for you so that way your community members are ready to respond to the emergency. We don't want to rush that process.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then I understand that there's a electronic a website that you could go to register for these courses.
Oh, yes, yes. Thank you for bringing that up. yes, we have ykhc.org. And when you go find our Office of Environmental Health and Engineering department, we have an online link where you can enroll for our first aid CPR classes and our basic life support classes. We do offer those. Those are our regularly scheduled classes located here in Bethel. And so they are free to take, mm-hmm. Free to sign up. And so our first aid CPR classes, we hold them every second and fourth Thursday of the month. And they're from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. And then we also offer Heart Code BLS classes. And those are every second Wednesday of the month. And they're from 8:30 to 10:30 in the morning. So they're right there available. And you can sign up for one from a year from now, or you can sign up for the one next month or this month. Just waiting for you on your phone.
That's awesome. Yeah, thanks for sharing. And I understand that the two of you have gone to different communities to do some training, community work as well. Can we hear a little bit about that?
Ooh, yes. Just recently, we were in Gwinnahawk last week, and we were teaching an ETT class for their search and rescue team.
Oh, okay.
So the search and rescue team that Gwinnahawk is a part of, they don't just serve only the community of Gwinnahawk. They are accumulated with Good News Bay and EEK.
Platinum, I think, too. Right?
And Platinum, I believe. So,
wow, that's cool.
And when the seasons allow, so for instance, like summer or winter, they can actually expand their services to other neighboring villages, wow. such as like EEK and Tuntutuliak, maybe Kong and Quigg as well. So it was really great to get invited by Gwinnahawk Search and Rescue. They have a very impressive program. And so when they contacted us, we were able to guide them into becoming registered with the state of Alaska in their EMS department as an organized first responder team.
That's cool.
Yeah. We're so excited for that because it allows them to get recognized statewide and nationally as a first responder team. And then it starts opening up more doors for them for resources. So for instance, if they were trying to apply for resources for EMS equipment, maybe mm-hmm. they need EMS training equipment, patient care equipment. Mm-hmm. These are all things, you know, that start become important or necessary to keep perpetuating your program. And so that became a really major step for them. And so they don't know it yet, but we're already looking forward to going back out there with them. After their ETT training last week, they held a mock drill. And so they had a mock drill where a patient was injured in a chainsaw incident.
Oh, geez.
And so the team practiced responding outside in the elements, and they had to prioritize any kind of like life-threatening injuries. They packaged their patient, and then they transported their patient 30 yards, which is Like, what is that? A third of a football field? But it wasn't just over like a really nice, even terrain.
Of course not.
They went through our classic willows and grass and knolls. And then they, in addition to packaging the patient, then they had to transport the patient and continue monitoring everything. And so they transported the patient via boat.
Wow.
So that just really made it
super realistic.
Very realistic. And so we were just really excited to be a part of their training system, and then just very ready to motivated to get invited back again to, like, how can we help, you know, with your next group of volunteers? How can we keep giving them more prepared and ready to respond for your emergencies?
That's awesome. That's really great to hear. Koyana Chaknak, for both of you for joining me today. Koyana to everyone who's listening. I'm Nikolai Joke, and this is Excellent Health with the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation.
Thank you for listening to Wellness Wednesday, a show about health and wellness in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. Listen online at kyuk.org, or tune in live every Wednesday at 10 a.m. right here on KYUK.